added tort so we can, right? Because you can outline duty and breach now, because we're moving on to our last element, causation. Okay, so we're going to start by looking at causation. So I want to do the worksheet as kind of an introduction, and then we'll look at the how, why not to build your own Tumblr case. Okay, so the first big picture concept is what two elements is causation linking? So what work is causation doing? Anyone want to volunteer? Good, Miss Seabrook, excellent volunteer. She didn't volunteer at all, but you know. So what two elements is causation linking? Correct, right? So we've shown an injury and we've shown breach. In other words, that the defendant lacked reasonable care is the typical standard we'd be running. And causation links the two, that the breach caused the injury. Let's simply make sure that we fully internalize that concept by doing some hypos. First, we just have to do the terminology problem, which is there are actually two types of causation. So in the intro material, I told you there were two types of causation. Finishing off our awesome song, I like Miss Seabrook will tell me the two types of causation.
Actual cause and proximate cause.
Correct, okay? Now, these actually pick up other names. So when you're reading cases, you will sometimes see a different label applied. Anyone know the other label you get for actual cause? Yep.
Cause in fact.
Cause in fact. So that's what we're going to look at first. Actual cause or cause in fact. And what's the other label for approximate cause? Yep.
Legal
cause. Legal cause, right? Fact versus legal cause, okay? Now, another terminology problem, because already you realize you've got two names for each concept, okay? One big problem with terminology is, and we're going to try and avoid doing this, is that sometimes courts call the whole concept what? Every now and then, they will say proximate cause, meaning the whole picture. So whenever you read proximate cause, you have to say, do they mean it? Are they really talking about legal cause, or are they just talking about causation? We're going to try to never do that, but it's a thing to watch out, it's particularly in jury instructions. It will often ask the jury if the defendant's breach was the proximate cause, and it won't explain the two different types, okay? So just look out for that confusion. Good? Okay. Let us do the introduction sheet then. Okay. So the first hypo is, I forgot to change the page numbers this morning. So sorry, the page numbers are to the old edition, so it should say to page 225, not page 217. So drivers A and B throw coffee out the window. So there's driver A throwing his coffee cup, and driver B throws the coffee cup. B's coffee falls to the ground. A's coffee hits Blue's car window, causing him to crash into a tree. Okay. Is A's negligence an actual cause of Blue's injury? Yes or no? So going to be 26 of you alive on a Monday morning. That will 27, that's good. That's all I need. Yes, at 89%, okay? Now, Miss Pitch, because I'm harassing this row. What test did you use to get that answer? So what's the test for cause and fact or actual cause? Okay, and so could you explain how but for is met here? What would you say? Okay, so could you apply that right here?
Here is no, because if he had not thrown it out, it wouldn't have been his part.
Right, so notice, what test we call it? The
but-for
test. Okay, so the but-for test says A breached and Bluth is injured. So one way to check actual cause is to say, no A breach, you would expect what? To prove causation, you'd have to show in the absence of A's breach, you would get no injury, right? Then you can say, oh, I know that the breach caused it, because but for A's breach, there would be no harm. Everybody see how we're trying to prove causation? We're saying, okay, we know he caused it, because if you take away the breach, we would expect no injury. So, but for the breach, there would be no harm. See it? Okay, let's try and do the second one. Oh, no, we will not try to do the second one because it says a little note to do something different. Okay, notice what tort law demands. Did B breach? Was B, you didn't listen to my question when you shook your head. Did B breach? Yes. So why isn't he liable? Because he didn't cause an injury. So negligence, right, requires the cause of an injury before there's liability. We don't go around like saying, oh, you breached, pay a ticket, right? It's only when your breach causes some harm that we elect under tort law to impose a penalty. Okay, let's try and do number two. Driver C throws the coffee out the window. So we'll move this to driver C. Driver C throws the coffee out the window, and then Professor Distel, appalled by the littering, raises his arms and hits a bee's nest, causing injury to Distel. Okay, so the question is, is C's negligence an actual cause of Professor Distel's injury? Yes or no? And the problem is, some of you answered a different question. So the correct answer is yes. Why is the correct answer yes? What is the question that's asked? Yes, Ms. Craig?
Because you're asking actual cause, and it contributed to the injury versus approximate cause, which means
for injuries. Right, the question is simply, was C's breach an actual cause of Distel's injury? Okay, so run this. C throws out the coffee. Is Distel injured? Yes. C doesn't throw out the coffee. Is Distel injured? No, because he doesn't put out his arms. Okay, so the but-for test is really easy to meet. It's like billiard balls, right?
Oh, look, this billiard ball hit this billiard ball. Oh, snooker, I'm sorry. What do Americans say, billiards?
Pool. Okay, pull, pull.
I mean, you know something different. Pull is when you swim. But never mind, pull.
Okay, it's just like, oh, look, this ball hit this ball, so this ball moved.
This people would have moved if this didn't happen. Erasing it,
that's all the but for test asks. It's a minimal level of proof, which in most cases is very easy to meet. Got it? So the correct answer here is yes. But we're going to have a massive problem when we apply legal approximate cause as to whether it's fair to make C pay for it. That's the question under C. Is it fair to make him to pay for it? This is met. Actual cause is met. Good? Okay, let's try the next question, which is driver Gillis would never throw her coffee out the window because she always desperately needs it. But never mind. Professor Gillis throws coffee out of the window. Gillis's coffee falls to the ground in front of driver Y. Driver Y never sees the cup and it doesn't hit his car. Y has a heart attack and hits a tree. Is Gillis's negligence an actual cause of Y's injury? No, it's 100%. Okay, can anyone say it as a sentence? So we all agree, but you have to have a sentence with the but for test in it. Otherwise, law has to be a multiple choice. Yes, Mr. Huffman.
Wise injury still would have occurred if Gillis had not thrown coffee out.
Bingo! Even in the absence of Gillis's breach, the harm would still have occurred, or you cannot say that but for her breach, there would be no injury. Excellent. Okay, let us try number four. Driver Gillis throws coffee out of the window. It splatters on Z's windscreen. Z collides with a tree, is injured, and sues. Passenger Pam, who's riding in Z's car, will testify that Z did not see it coming because he was looking at his cell phone. Passenger Pam will testify that Z's handling of his cell phone and not the coffee caused Z to hit the tree. Is Gillis's negligence an actual cause of Z's injury? In fact, are we all happy? Are we good? Okay, let's just do a little rule check. If you didn't get the but-for test, given it was written in the book, you need to read better. Yeah, that was a generous interpretation. But you also need to double check you understand all the concepts that surround the rule. So the first concept I want to make sure you get right is plaintiff must prove this by a preponderance of the evidence. So the test is but for, right? The defendant's breach of duty was an actual cause of her injury as shown by proving that but for the breach, the plaintiff would not have been injured. So is it true that plaintiff must prove this by the preponderance of the evidence, i.e. more likely than not? True, right? It's plaintiff's element. They bear the typical civil burden of proof, which is preponderance of the evidence, more likely than not. So we're simply asking, is it more likely than not that defendant's breach caused plaintiff's injury? Not absolutely, totally, for sure. Question number two. Again, true, false. Plaintiff must prove that the defendant's breach was the sole cause of her injury. So this plaintiff has to prove that defendant's breach was the sole cause of her injury. False. Because plaintiff simply has to prove what? Defendant's breach was a cause, one of many causes, right? So all we have to affirmatively prove is the more likely than not link between the defendant's breach and plaintiff's injury. We do not have to exclude all other causes. Why not? Let's go to Bluth being injured when A froze the cup. What are causes of Bluth being injured? One of them, right, is A throwing the cup. What else?
The mere existence of the tree.
The tree, right? Anything else?
Driving at that time.
Driving.
Right, the Bluth is driving, right? The Bluth parents met at a movie in 1908 or whatever, right? Okay? Or the... His parents? Okay? Or the A's parents ever met? Or that there wasn't a tornado. Or that A stopped at McDonald's, because if they didn't stop at McDonald's, they wouldn't get to the intersection at the same time. See? So there are thousands and millions of things that are the cause, or a cause, right? A cause of the plaintiff's injury. But what the tests ask is, did defendant's breach play the role we want it to play? See the question? That's why it's so important to make sure you're asking, was it a cause, not the cause? See it? Okay. Actual cause is typically a question for the jury, true or false. One where the court takes it away from the jury, but in most scenarios, just like breach, the question of cause and fact is a question for the jury. Okay, everybody good? We're going to do one little hard thing, and then we'll do the wiry switchy things. Okay. Sometimes you will have noticed that this test could be called a counterfactual test. Did you see that? Why? Anyone work out what that means? So far we've represented that cause and fact is really easy, really straightforward. We love it. It's just like formulas. It's nothing complicated. But in fact, it takes a lot of lawyering. Yep.
We would have to look at how it could have happened otherwise had the stated cause that we were looking at, the stated actual cause, not occurred.
Everybody see that? So this is actually the counterfactual, the hypo. Well, suppose they didn't do anything. Would Bluth be injured? See that? This is reality. This is what we know. But the test actually asks us to come up with, we think if A had never thrown the coffee cup, Bluth would not have been injured. And see how that's... The lawyers are creating that counterfactual and convincing the jury of that counterfactual, which is what leads us to say, therefore, they caused it. Everybody see that little bit of wiggle room you have as a lawyer? Got it? So it's not quite as clean as we like to pretend.
Okay. Good. Let us approach Skinner.
Okay, anyone want to draw a picture, or am I drawing a picture?
Oh, but wait, Thursday is art day for you. Okay, I have to get someone to talk me through the picture. Mr. Salam, you have to talk me through the picture. What does plaintiff build?
Did you say Salam?
No, I said Mr. Salam. I'm going. Oh. I could go right over there. Would you prefer me to say Sloan?
He's a new rep coming up, sir.
Oh, okay, Mr. Sloan. Apparently, he's been nominated by the entire class. Okay. So, what do I need in my art? I need this tumbler thing with the bits in. What else do I need?
The free wires.
And what do the free wires go into?
The alligator clips,
okay, and what do the alligators, so here are the wires, we don't really care about one of them, okay? And what do they got, what's over here? So we need something, what makes the tumbler work?
The
switch. What, so that you need a little motor, sorry, motor, okay. You have to film one tonight, okay? So that goes into the motor, right? And these are these two wires. And do they go directly into the power source?
No.
Okay, so what's the problem?
There's a square D switch.
Okay, there's my switch. Okay, and what does the plaintiff allege is the fault here? What's wrong with the switch?
There's a phantom area that you don't really know if the switch is off or on.
Okay, so can you explain what that means? So if I was looking at this switch, what's the problem with it? Is a phantom zone? So explain that concept.
Sometimes maybe the switch appeared to be off when it was actually on.
Bingo. So is the switch off right here? It appears to be. What do you think the real answer is? No, that's the problem. When is the power really off? There or there?
Yeah, all the way.
You have to go all the way to here to turn it off. So see the problem? There's a phantom zone. There's a zone where when you look at the switch, you go, oh, well, that's off. It's towards the off, but it's not. It's only truly off when you push it all the way down. So see the problem? Because the switch does what, according to the plaintiff?
Shut the electric off.
And when he looks at the switch, according to plaintiff's theory, why does that cause his injury?
Because for the process that he cleans the metal, he needed the electric to be off in order for him to rewire the tumbler. So when it appears to be off, for it to be safe, he needed it to be off.
Okay. So their initial theory is that he does what? It's me. What am I trying to do?
That he thinks it's off, and he goes ahead and switches the wires anyways. But he gets electrocuted.
Right, and dies. It's kind of sad, right? And his wife and everybody sees him dying. Okay. So it seems a pretty good theory, right? Everybody see the breach is the switch, and they say it caused the injury because he looks at the switch and he says, oh my goodness, it's safely off, I'll turn the wires, and he's misled by the breach and it causes his injury. What's the problem with that theory?
They don't offer enough evidence to show that it's more probable than possible.
This theory is going down. That's the next thing. Yes. What's wrong with this theory? So their theory is, he goes to push it off, he thinks it's off, but he's misled by the switch, but why doesn't that work?
Because it's still running.
Right, he's going, rah, I think it's off, I can bear it, right? He knows it's not off. Everybody see the problem? If it's really connected still, he's not being misled by the switch. Everybody see? So that was the theory the wires went in on, and it clearly won't work. Okay, so what is their new theory? The plaintiff had to present some kind of new theory, which we're going to have to assess. Yep?
The wires were unplugged. Working in, but then it also worked at the same time and got re-unplugged. Very unclear.
Okay, it's very unclear. Okay, anyone work a little bit more on this theory? Okay, so why is it important for the plaintiff to show the wires were unhooked? What's that solve?
Because
then the machine because then the tumbler isn't going to tell you whether the power is on or off. So what else do they have to work on, though? To connect the breach, what else do they have to show?
That the clips got magically reconnected. When he, like, they were unclipped before, and then he was touching them, and they have to show that they got connected again in order for him to be like...
Okay, but that's, so hold that a little bit, because that's what he's going to do. But what does he essentially have to do? He has to walk up to the machine and be what? For you to get causation, what's the breach?
He has to be electrocuted.
No, that's the injury. What's the breach? He has to be misled by the switch, right? Because otherwise, so we have to get it so that he's misled by the switch. Right, so to be misled to the switch, what does the power situation have to be? The power has to be on, but it has to be, appear to be, off. Okay, so we need the power to be on, but appear, I'm sorry, the power to be on, but appear to be off. So he's misled by that, so he picks these up and is electrocuted. Okay. The problem is, how did it get like that? Everybody see? That one works in terms of what he does, but how does it get like that? So what's their theory about that?
I thought they blamed it on a coworker that he did it, or he thought that he did it. I don't know. He blamed it on a coworker.
The coworker. So notice if you were about to cease using this machine, right? So it has to be someone before left the machine like this, right? Because if he left the machine like this, then he's not misled by the switch. Okay. So someone before left the machine like this. What would you do if you were shutting off the machine? Yep.
Like unplug it or something?
We're not going
to
unplug it.
The power.
Right, so you would
unhook that from the switch.
Turn it off.
The problem is that they do.
He would. If they didn't have it off, there would already be a dead person.
So that's right, because their problem is that either they disconnect it with it on, right? In which case, who do we think is going to get electrocuted? They are, right? The person who's disconnecting it. So that's not going to work.
Or they would have turned it off. Taking the clips off, and then turn it back into the family position.
So, right, everybody do it again. What's their theory now? Okay, the first worker does what?
Turned it all the way off. Went and undid all of the clips, and then went and put it back into the family position.
Intentionally, or?
Well, they would, I mean, hopefully not.
Right, hopefully not. Right, so their theory depends on, so if you read it through, the plaintiff's theory depends on the idea that this first worker turns it off, undoes the clips, and then some other person or somehow it gets joggled back into the phantom area. So when he walks up and sees it, he thinks, oh, it's safe, and he gets electrocuted. Is that possible? No, is it possible? It's possible. Is that enough to go to the jury? And the court says, no. Okay? So why not? So now we need law. Law's good. We got the facts. We got plaintiff's new theory. What's the law? So when can you send the case to the jury on a question of cause and fact? Yep.
When you are able to show that it is a reasonable inference, even though other inferences may exist from the same pattern of facts.
Okay, so this seems reasonable.
And it must be probable, not merely possible.
Okay, so that's our problem. So let's try the first one. Does it defeat plaintiff's claim that there are other possible explanations? Answer? No. So what's the other possible explanation here that the defendant really believes? Yep.
He forgot that
he forgot. He said 1,000 times. It's like me turning right in front of someone at my driveway. There's never anyone there. Why would there be anyone here today? Oh shit, right? It's tries to change it without turning off the electricity, right? So it has, and why does the defendant like that explanation?
Because it's his fault.
Not just it's his fault, even stronger. Okay, but there can be many causes. So even stronger.
It was the contributing cause.
No.
So
there's no breach.
But there's still a breach because the switch doesn't work.
There's no breach for the company though.
There's still a breach.
There's no link between the breach and the cause.
Bingo! Right? Remember, the breach is still there because you still have a lousy switch, right? But if they are correct that he switched it just because he always does that, let's try it. Problem switch, he's electrocuted. No problem switch, he's still electrocuted. In other words, their theory is the switch, oh yeah, it was a bad switch, but it did not cause the injury. It played no role in his injury. So I already see it's not just that it was his fault, it's that their breach played no role. So their theory is nothing to do with our switch. Could it be a perfect switch, a wonderful switch, he would still be electrocuted. So there's the two possibilities, right? Possibility number one is someone detached it, pushed the switch back, it got nudged back, he goes innocently, looks at the switch, oh my goodness, it's safe, there's the causal link, and is electrocuted. Possibility number two, he's like, oh, yeah, I can just do this. No, we can't, right? And the switch plays no role. So see those two possibilities. Yep.
Under the plaintiff's theory, why would you not try to say that the person who bumped it back into the phantom position would also be liable, since their action would have been an actual cause, because had
so yeah, are they a cause too? Yes. So why not name them?
Because they're unknown.
Because they're unknown, right? That's part of the problem, right? They don't have any evidence about that happening, okay? So we got two possible theories. But we know it's still okay to meet the preponderance of the evidence if you have two possible theories, right? It doesn't defeat plaintiff's case that there's another possible way it happened. So what's the line we have to get off over for plaintiff to have enough proof? Possible versus probable. And what do we mean by probable?
More than 50%.
Right, more likely than not. So that's why we have these two P words, right? Because probable meets the plaintiff's burden of proof, but possible doesn't. What kind of description do we have of what the jury does if we're impossible? And what kind of description do we have about what the jury does if we're improbable? So when you look at the quotes, what kind of thing does the court say about what the jury is doing if the evidence simply gets to the level of possible? It would be mere what?
Guessing.
Mere guessing, but they're liars, they use fancy words. They say speculation or conjecture, right? They say if you're down here, you're just asking the jury to guess, to speculate, to conjecture. Up here, there's enough evidence that the jury could, if they wanted, say that the defendant's breach caused the harm. Okay, so, do you agree with the majority that here the evidence is not enough to get over that line? So what evidence is it that we're missing? In other words, what evidence would the court like to see which would lead the court to say, yes, you can go to a jury?
What actually happened?
That would be great if we had a video cam, right? But we don't. So let's scale it back. What other evidence that they don't get into the record here?
They have no eyewitness.
There's no eyewitness. So we don't have a video cam, we don't have an eyewitness. You're absolutely right. But does that mean we can never cause cause and fact if you don't have a videotape or eyewitness? No. So we could do it on
circumstantial evidence. So what circumstantial evidence are we missing in this case? Yep. We don't know if the wires were hooked or unhooked. Anybody got any more evidence about the wires? So what do we know about the wires, or about how the shop operated? So what was in the evidence about how the shop operated? Yep.
I think in the way that they somehow dry the metal, it has to go frontwards and then backwards.
Okay, but that doesn't really help us, does it? Do you think it does? So what do we know about how they usually left the machine? Because that's what plaintiff's theory changes on. Do we know anything? Yep.
Was there a testimony that he always was careful with it?
So the plaintiff puts in testimony, we're always careful, right? He was always careful. He was the most, how does that help? What theory does that push up or push down about possibilities? He was always careful. He was the most careful person you've ever met.
It defeats the theory that he was the one that left.
Right, so that pushes down their theory that the defendant just goes, oh shucks, I'll just do it. Everybody testified, no, he's Mr. Nerd. He's always really careful. He would never just do it. So good evidence, it pushes down their theory that he just did it. What pushes down plaintiff's theory? So I don't want to find any more lack of evidence or evidence. Yep.
That they always made sure that the switch was off before disconnecting the wires.
Bingo. So how was it in the phantom zone, right? Because the testimony is they always make sure it's off before they took the wires off. So what does plaintiff have to look for evidence about now? How did it get jogged into that phantom zone? And what evidence does plaintiff have? Nothing, right? There's no, oh my goodness, it was chaotic in the workshop that day. Or, oh my goodness, there were people running around all the time, right? They have no testimony that anyone hit the machine, joggled the machine, walked past the machine. So the court, for that reason, thinks all you put forward is a hypothetical possibility. You couldn't get across probability.
So all they would have had to add was we might have bumped it, and it could have gone to the jury.
So what do you think? Suppose Workman X said, well, you know, actually, I was working in the shop that day, and I bumped into the machine.
That would have been a reason why you could have. So that's all they would have had to do to get it.
Well, what do you think? Do you think
I would have thought.
Yeah, it sounds probable. Okay, now what's the problem with that? A problem Mr. Zamory raised. As soon as the worker says that, who looks like the primary person at fault? The co-worker, right? The co-worker who likely doesn't have much money because I can't believe they're paying much over minimum wage for the tumbler in the garage, right? So notice that's their problem. Okay, let's compare this possible probable line with other cases. Right, because that's the way the court tries to make a decision in this case, right? It looks at other cases where we use circumstantial evidence and it tries to decide if in those cases there was enough evidence to get over the line. So one of the first ones, if you look at all the cases they do, was the Chriscroft case, like 232. They do three cases, right? They do Chriscroft. Then they do the Kaminsky case, and then they do the Howe case. Okay, so let's try Chriscroft. So take a look at Chriscroft and ask yourself, first big question, did in Chriscroft the court say that the plaintiff had got over the line and showed it was more likely than not that the defendant's breach was a but-for cause? Answer, yes. So why? Why was there more evidence in Chriscroft than there was here?
Expert testimony.
About what?
The possibility that when the fuel goes down to the engine, it runs off rather by guessing.
So the expert testified if it was really a leaking pump, whose pump is it? Plaintiff's or defendant's?
the defendants, because that's the injury breach duty. The breach is the leaking fuel pump. So the expert testifies, if it was a leaking fuel pump, then what would happen?
It would run rough.
And? It would run rough, but it wouldn't do what?
Shut up.
What does plaintiff testify he heard before he was exploded? Yep, heard it? And did the engine shut off?
No.
Do you think that's enough to get over the mere possibility that it was defendant's pump or it was probable? Bingo, okay? So the court there says you've got enough to make it more likely than not. Did they eliminate all other possible causes? Is that required? No. Yep.
They did eliminate a lot more, but they said most other things would shut off the engine as well.
Excellent. So they're pushing down other possibilities, which increases the likelihood that this is a cause. Excellent. Okay, let's try Kaminsky. So notice the first thing you have to do is identify the breach, because you can't run causation unless you have the right breach. It's not did anything cause it, it's defendant's breach cause it. So I don't want to do Kaminsky. Or I just continue my reign of terror. Miss Evans? Oh, you already had a highlight. Miss Craig? What happens in Kaminsky?
He runs into a, or well, he supposedly falls and then hits some kind of park, like railroad track, dirt thing.
Yeah, except your description wasn't really pro-plaintiff. So what happens? What happens?
Okay, so he was hit by a trailer that was parked near when he was on the train.
Wait, he's not on the train. You've conflated two cases. He's not on the train. That's the next one. How's the one where he's on the train? Kaminsky, what happens? Here's my train.
The trailer?
Okay, Miss Evans, steal. Go ahead.
The trailer got hit by the train, and then in turn it hit him.
And so where is he in his car?
Was he in his car?
Yeah, it's not real clear, but he's in his car right here.
And then he said he ended up then on top of the trailer without knowing.
Okay, so his theory is what's the breach? Because notice, you have to find the breach before you can run cause and effect. So
doctor should have seen it and stopped.
They should have seen the trailer and stopped. So the conductor was failing to take reasonable care in looking ahead on the line. Okay? What evidence do we have that it was the failure to keep a lookout that causes the injury? So why are we going from, okay, that's possible, train can hit it, that's possible. What pushes us over to probable? Because they have other theories. They're not really set out here. Like, he drove into the trailer. It's nothing to do with them, right?
The fact that there were no other objects in the area.
There's no other objects in the area. Why is that important? Right. The train's the only thing in the area. There's not a big bulldozer here or anything else that could have moved the train up. So it makes it more likely that the train hit the trailer. What other bit of evidence do we have?
Screeching noises.
Testified to who?
By the conductor and the plaintiff.
Both the plaintiff and the conductor testified to screeching noises as the train goes past the trailer, indicating that? It hit it. So the court says goes from the mere speculation to probable. A jury could find it's probable that the train hit the trailer, hit the plaintiff. Okay, let's do the next one. How? I'm not asking you how, I'm asking you about the how case. Yes?
In that case, would the person, the trailer, not be the person that you go after, considering did they have a breach by being too close to the train?
It's not clear that, so you could argue that the trailer is breach and is
the cause.
What did you just say? The cause. Should you say the?
A
cause. So you could argue that they breached and they are a cause, and that the train breached and are a cause.
Okay.
right? But remember, you can have multiple causes, right? So you're absolutely correct. You could, if you wanted, try and argue in addition or instead that the trailer breached and was a cause, okay? Does cause in fact solve that for you? Tell you who should pay and how much? Cause in fact? No, right? Because are they both causes? So what super duper exciting doctrine do you think may fly down from the heavens to help us with complicated cases like this? Proximate cause, right? So when you start talking about, well, who should legally have to pay here? I'm not quite sure who legally should have to pay. You're engaging in a proximate cause argument, right? So here, they are both a cause. They are multiple causes of an injury, but they both meet cause in fact. Good? But whether one should have to pay and the other not is a proximate cause argument, which we will get to in time. You will love that. Okay, so let's try the how case. Does it get over the line from possible to probable? Answer? No. Why not? What evidence? What's plaintiff's theory about what happened? What's plaintiff's hypothetical? So you first have to start with what?
Like you said, there wasn't enough space in between. What bridge between the start first?
Yep.
Okay, like you said, there wasn't enough space in between the railroad and where you were stepping out in some sort.
Right. So the defendants, when they built this bridge, breached their duty of ordinary care because they didn't leave enough space, right? So that if you have to start, I would tell you that 50% of you will not start with breach. You'll point to something else and you go, well, that caused it. And I'm like, well, that's really cute, but it ain't the breach, right? The only thing you put at the start of the equation is whatever breach you pick. Okay, so the breach we pick here is that defendants didn't leave enough room between the train and the side of the bridge, so when he gets out, he falls into the water and drowns. Why isn't that enough? Sounds a really good theory to me. Why doesn't it get across the possible to the probable? Yep.
Because there were other factors or other causes that could have been probable causes.
But the mere existence of other possible causes doesn't eliminate it.
They were more probable or more likely to cause than what he was claiming.
So you think they proved there were more likely causes? That's how they defeated it? So let's say, what evidence was there?
That there was a storm and that there was outside influences, the weather.
Okay, so they proved it was a storm. What else evidence do they have about what happened to him?
It was dark.
It was dark, yes.
No one saw.
No one saw. So what's the last time we see him?
He
puts his lance and he steps outside. So do you think it's that more ones were probable? More probable? Well, yeah. I don't know what I was hoping for some clarity. So do you think the other ones are probable and this one isn't? They're all possible, right? But none of them on this evidence get over the possible to the probable, right? All of them are possible. So it's not that there's a more probable one and this one's just possible. It's that none of them make it across the possible to the probable, including this one. Okay. In every single one of these cases, is the but-for test working fine? Or what kind of problem do we have? Is the test crazy? Or what kind of problem do we have?
It's not crazy. Just getting over the hump of it being possible. We don't care about anything being probable in the experimental circumstances. It's the problem.
So it's a problem of what? Is it a problem with the test, or it's a problem that the plaintiff...
Like the test is like a maybe answer, like but for, well, it could be and it could not be.
And so why are we getting a maybe? Do you think the test is flawed? Or what's plaintiff's problem? It's simply a proof problem,
right? If we had spy satellites everywhere, would any of these cases have a problem? No, every single one we go, oh, look, there's the conductor, oh, oops, it was the bridge, or oh no, it was a slippy step, right? Every one of these cases is simply a proof problem. The test runs fine, we just don't know what happened. So sometimes cause and effect is hard, not because the legal test is problematic, but because we lack information, right? Sometimes, when you read for the rest of the week, the test just doesn't work as a test, right? It's not a, quote, proof problem. It's that the test turns out to be less than satisfactory. Okay, so that's the kind of question you can ask. Is the test fine? Is this just a proof problem for the plaintiff? Or is this a case where actually the test doesn't work? Are we good? Okay, I will see you tomorrow. Notice Wednesday we're doing substance, and then Thursday we're doing a cute little review, which will involve you guys doing artwork. So laugh as much as you like. That Thursday, you guys are on the board with artwork.
Can we hear cookies?
What?